Welcome into the Air Raid with Parker Kelly here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3, the game across the Game Nashville Sports Network. I told you on the last episode that we would have a very special guest for the first time ever, Outkick's Chad Withrow, the co-host of Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow. Certainly excited to have him on today because we have a lot to cover. It has been a whirlwind of news and updates throughout the past couple of days. So very excited to have him on today. Without further ado, here is our interview with Chad Withrow. Welcome back into the Air Raid with Parker Kelly as we welcome on our very first guest, Outkick's Chad Withrow, co-host of Hot Mic. Chad, first of all, it's great to have you on. And second of all, I'm really excited for today's conversation because it is the pinnacle of the NFL draft season. But over the past couple of days, it just proves that there is really no offseason in college football. And who says that we can't talk about college football during the pinnacle of the NFL draft?
It really is. First off, thanks for having me on, Parker. Excited to be on your show today. Yeah, it's incredible that this story, especially when you talk about Nico Iamaleava, had, 12 days of runway with everything and twist and turn, and where is he going to go, and is he officially going to UCLA, and then Tennessee has to find a quarterback, and then his brother transfers. So it just goes to show that one trigger point like that can set off and knock over a domino that affects all these other different stories, and that's where we are in college football and college basketball also. I mean, it's as intriguing. I love March Madness. I love the tournament. But once that tournament ends and the transfer portal begins, it's fascinating to follow all the moves with that. Then you kind of have to resettle yourself and get ready for the season and start to realize, oh, that's right, this guy did transfer here. And now this team added these three guys. It really is incredible. The business part of it is beyond repair until that we get some constraints into it and a set of guidelines. But from just a sheer entertainment perspective and for the stuff that we do for a living, where we're talking about stories, it has created a ton of stories that otherwise wouldn't be there in the old college sports model.
Man, I'm with you. Like, I'm a college football, college basketball junkie, and it is so hard for me to keep up with who's going where. It's like my head is on a swivel, and, like, even as someone who loves this stuff as much as we do, it is incredibly difficult to keep up with.
Oh, it's very difficult. And I tell everyone, you know, I can't even look. Like, high school recruiting is something that I would follow for years. And I still do to a certain extent. But I do so less because with the high school recruiting, once you got that commitment and eventually got that signature, it was, you know, 10 years ago, oh, my gosh, we have this guy for 3 years, whoever we is, whatever your team is. We have this guy for 3 or 4 years. That's incredible. Now everything is year to year. Parker, I don't look at what class someone is in college anymore. I don't care if they're a redshirt freshman, if they're a senior, if they're a junior, if they're a sophomore, whatever it is, because it's all year to year. It's gotten to the point where it's so wild with the movement that I just look up during fall camp and, okay, here's the roster. I'm not really paying attention to what class anyone is because they could all be gone next year anyways, and a whole new set of guys could come in. So it really is more about studying your team and your roster in fall camp, getting ready for a year, and not paying as much attention to, oh boy, this redshirt freshman's playing well. We've got him for another 2 years. This is going to be great. Because when that redshirt freshman plays well, he could always parlay that into a bigger paycheck somewhere else. So can't take anything for granted. Everything is year to year. I don't look at the class of a player anymore because ultimately it really doesn't matter.
And I used to, like, I still try to as much as I can, but I just said it's extremely difficult. But I really used to be into, like, National Signing Day. That was like Christmas Day for college football fans. And now, could you even tell me when National Signing Day was this year? Because I woke up in February on the day it actually was, and I didn't even realize it until about noon.
Yeah, I didn't know either. Wasn't it during Super Bowl week, maybe?
I believe so. Yeah. Leading up to the Super Bowl, or maybe the week before.
Like the Tuesday of the Super Bowl, it is crazy because that was a national holiday for a while. And now you have the two signing periods, too, like the one in December, you know, the earlier one and then the later one. So it kind of takes a lot away from it. But I just think in general, because of the transient nature of the sport and players going to and from constantly, that it's harder to keep a focus on high school recruiting. I mean, I'll take it a step further. I'm reading stories today where Shefflin and another player from Clemson are in the transfer portal in basketball, but they've exhausted their eligibility. So they are in the portal hoping someone will take them in hopes that lawsuits will allow them to play because of lawsuits of others. So I'm thinking, well, why doesn't Tennessee just hold a roster spot for Zakai Ziegler and Jemai Mashak with the last two, if that's even a possibility? It's just so crazy. There's hundreds of players in the transfer portal that are just hoping to be taken by someone, even though they legally right now have no ability to play in the sport. So I don't know what's going on with that, but that, to me, that's just a perfect example of where we are right now, where no one really knows what the story is. And one injunction or one lawsuit filed in the right state could lead to someone getting, you know, 6, 7, 8 years of eligibility or whatever it's going to be, and not the old rules of college sports.
And then you throw in the Diego Pavia court case ruling into this, and it is just – it's madness. But I want to go ahead and transition to the story that has absolutely captivated the college football world for the last 2 weeks, and the Nico Iamaliava saga. He officially committed – to UCLA on Monday, and then I was scrolling through Twitter, and later on Monday night, see that his brother decided to hop into the portal as well, and I'm like, oh my gosh, we're about to get round two, aren't we? And then he follows his brother to UCLA. What do you make of this whole saga and how Nico Iamaliava's camp and his dad have kind of handled this whole situation?
Well, it's been a disaster from the Nico camp side of it. I mean, they completely misplayed their leverage and the situation. And I just – there's just so many missteps along the way, right? Like, there's the report that he was threatening to hold out of the playoff game, whether that's true or not. I think there's some truth to it. It's certainly true, and no one's denying, even on his side, that they tried to get more money. Well, they're saying it wasn't about money, the decision to leave. Look, that's semantics. I know for a fact from the people that heard from them that they were trying to get double their paycheck. They wanted $4 million, essentially, to come back and play one more year at Tennessee. So when Spire Sports, the Vols Collective, said no, they kind of, you know, dug in, but also whatever, this is probably the best situation. They decided to go to the spring camp and play again. And then they started playing the same thing again. Oh, the receivers aren't good enough. The offensive line isn't good enough. And you didn't pay us anything. So they wanted to go back to the negotiating table and then started contacting other schools. And that's where it backfired on them. Because when Dan Lanning and others started calling Josh Heupel saying, your quarterback is being shot, that's when they had to do something. They had to make a move one way or the other, whether that stopped with the conversations and fully commit to Tennessee and playing this season or to leave. And I think that they made the decision very easy for Josh Heupel to say, well, we're done with it. You need to go. You no-showed for practice. And we're moving forward. Nico was hurt drastically in all of this. His reputation has been damaged. There's been a lot of nitpicking about him as a player now that would not have been there had he just stayed at Tennessee. Look, if he stays at Tennessee, has a great year statistically, which he should have done in year two of the Heupel system with a good supporting cast, he could have gone pro, maybe been a first-round, second-round draft pick, and he would make millions more. But instead, he played a bad leverage play. He got called out. He has to leave. He's going to a worse offense to make less money. He's having to learn a completely new system in a short amount of time in that offense. He's hurt his draft stock. He's going to have to face questions about this forever. He could have been a Tennessee legend, right? There's a lot of benefits to that.
Oh, absolutely.
A lot of alumni, people that would have been around him, right, that would have supported him. And now all that's out the window. So I feel somewhat bad for the guy, because he was led this way by his agent, Cordell Landers, and his father. But ultimately, it's on him to make those decisions. He's a big boy. He's over 18 years old. It's his decision to live with. He's got to live with it. It was a terrible decision. Tennessee football will be fine, ultimately. They might have a rougher season in 2025 because of this. But in the long run, they're going to be just fine. I'm not so sure Nico will. And that's the unfortunate part of all this.
And I did some research last night. Tennessee's offense, now despite it not being as good as it was in 2022, it still wasn't bad. They're 15th in the country in yards per game, 13th in the country in points per game. And then you look at UCLA's offense, what they did last year. Chad, they were 12th in total offense in the Big Ten, 14th in scoring offense in the conference, and I don't know, there's like 20-something teams in the conference now, but like still, that's really – it's apples and oranges difference. And not to mention, too, you're going to UCLA. You wanted $4 million at Tennessee, and now at UCLA, you're going to make around $1 million, but you factor in the California taxes and everything, and it's closer to $900,000. So just a complete mess.
Yeah, it's real bad. I mean, you're right. The financial hit he's going to take in living in California. And I mean, look, they could say, well, it's really about the offensive system and developing quarterbacks. So UCLA has a new offense this year. They hired a guy from Indiana who's never called offensive plays in Tito Sunseri, right? This is the first time when he calls an offensive play for Nico will be the first time he's ever called an offensive play. Indiana had a great offense. I don't know that it's going to translate, and I don't know, you know, how good he's going to be within this offense, and we have no idea how good the offensive coordinator is. So, again, it's not like he was able to trade up to a better roster or a better team or a better pro-style offense or any of that. He traded down. And ultimately, and I know we're going to get to it, but Tennessee doesn't win in this. But they lose their starting quarterback after spring. That's certainly less than ideal. Nico's a huge loser in all of this for where he's going now and what it does to his draft stock and what people think about him and all those things. I think maybe the only winner in this is Joey Aguilar, who ended up trading up to a better program, a better roster, a better situation in the SEC. Now, he's going to have to learn an offense over the course of a summer, too, and get acclimated to his teammates. But maybe Joey Aguilar, the guy who was passed over at UCLA, could be the only winner in this whole story.
And we're going to get to that really quick. But before we do the whole Joey Aguilar situation, there is a positive to this Nico situation because it's kind of opened everyone's eyes nationally to what us college football people have been talking about for a long time. Now, Nico's a big boy. If he's making $2.4 million, you know, he's expected to make big boy decisions. His dad and quote-unquote agent certainly had a play in this as well. But it certainly opened everybody's eyes nationally that there are no rules in college football. It truly is the wild, wild west. And us people have been talking about this for a while. But now everybody else is starting to get on board and seeing like, there is a lot wrong and there's stuff that needs to be fixed behind the scenes.
Yeah, and I really think that now here's what it really did, right? Like Tennessee, yeah, it was a good move by Heupel, and he's going to get some positive reviews for that move and doing this, right, and kind of taking a stand. But what it really does is I think it opens the door for people to be more honest about what's going on. Fran Brown at Syracuse is a great example of someone who was honest about what one of his players was pulling after the Josh Heupel and Nico thing became so public, it became okay to do that. Hunter Yurichuk at Arkansas, the AD, says, we're going to go after that money that was promised to a player in NIL and try to recoup it, which is absolutely right of him to do. You know, we got in this discussion yesterday and, you know, we were talking about, well, he's there for a year. Do they prorate it over 12 months? Does he get the money up front? I'm thinking this needs to rework it now where they don't get paid until they are past the portal windows and they are committed to the roster for the year, right?
Yep.
Because if he got paid up front, just took his money and ran, I mean, it's obvious you're getting paid to play during the season. You're not getting paid to participate in spring practice when you arrive on a campus. So that's a ridiculous thing that if you're going to pay somebody money in NIL, you're paid to be a member of the team during the season when the games are actually happening. So I think that now Hunter Yurichuk releases that statement. You've got Fran Brown. There's going to be more and more people that are open and honest about it. I'll give you an example. I'm hearing a ton of stuff about Nico now that I never heard while he was playing at Tennessee. We need to know these things while they're playing in school. So if reporters are sitting on these things, and I understand it, they don't want to report these things because it's going to hurt them with the program. It's going to hurt them with the fan base because the fans are going to immediately respond and say, why are you trashing our starting quarterback? Why are you getting on this? So this is fake news. This is this or that. But I've heard reports of Nico no-showing at autograph appearances. It's part of his NIL deal. Calling his dad when he arrives an hour late. And then his dad cussing people out there and saying he's not doing it. And him just getting in a car and leaving. I mean, that needs to be reported, right? If I'm the guy at the car dealership that owns the car dealership that Nico's supposed to sign there, I'm getting that to a reporter to report it. Like, these are the things that we need to talk about and that need to be out there. Because there has to be some recourse to bad behavior in this with the players. right? If they're just allowed to do what they want and never face any criticism from someone like a Jay Billis, who's always going to take the side of a player, then what's going to stop them? What's the deterrent from just continuing to behave that way, to not fulfill obligations, to leave whenever you want, and do all those things? I'm all for these guys getting money and getting paid, you know, market value. But with that comes a ton of responsibility. And you can't just start taking checks and be willy-nilly about it and then come and go as you please. And I think that's where we are now, Parker, is we're to a point where I think people feel emboldened now to be more honest and speak more freely about what's happening. And I hope that reporters follow suit and you start to read and hear about guys who are being difficult when they start making that NIL money.
Yeah, and it was Dan Lanning was the reported one to kind of feed that information to Josh Heupel that, hey, Nico is looking around. And I heard a segment that Josh Pate did over at CBS 24/7 that there were not just Nico, but there were other players that were getting offers from other schools, maybe even potentially threatening to sit out of a playoff game. And I'm with you. Like, I would have loved to know all of that stuff while it was happening rather than, okay, now that this whole Nico mess has gone down, and then now we're starting to hear about it.
Yeah, and look, I would tell Josh Pate this, and he comes on our show, you know, often. Like, let's talk about that then. Let's hear names, you know, if you've got them. Let's hear teams that are facing those problems. And maybe he talked about that on our show, and I'm failing to remember that. But that's sort of the next step. Like, it's inconsequential after the fact, oh, this guy left school. You know, he's in the NFL draft, and now we're going to talk about all the stuff he did. Or he transferred out. Now we feel like we can badmouth him because all this was going on. Like, no, we need to hear about and read about the stuff in the present. Because when that goes public, that someone is negotiating to play in a playoff game because they're arguing they signed up for 12 games and not 13, or whatever the argument is, that's going to make that player look terrible. And that's what needs to happen if they're going to make a move like that, right? There has to be a deterrent for doing those types of things. So I think that's what I'm hoping now our industry, media, reporters that cover these teams get a little bit more open and honest, and that teams will start telling on some of these guys when they do some of this stuff. I think that's the next step that we're starting to see now with Fran Brown and with Hunter Yurecek.
And I'm very thankful we're having this conversation right now because I'm so ready to put a bow on this situation. I'm tired of talking about it. I'm tired of hearing about it. I'm ready to move on. And with moving on, Tennessee has gotten the first ever college football trade that we've ever seen. UCLA quarterback Joey Aguilar has committed to Tennessee. First of all, I know we didn't really watch a whole lot of Joey Aguilar when he was at App State, but I've kind of done some research, and he had good numbers, but he also really struggled with turnovers. But you got to remember with Josh Heupel, and I heard that you made this point when you were on with Stillman, Heupel took a guy like Joe Milton and Hendon Hooker, who couldn't win the starting jobs at Michigan and Virginia Tech respectively. He turned Hendon Hooker into a Heisman Trophy candidate, should have been invited to New York. And he took a guy like Joe Milton, who couldn't win the job at Michigan, and he got them both drafted. So he's certainly able to soak every ounce of potential that he can out of a guy like Joey Aguilar.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a good track record of taking, you know, other people's trash and turning them into treasure with his system. And I also think that just with the nature of his offense with the wide splits and how quickly they get the ball out of the hands of the screen game and all that, that it does limit turnovers or interception opportunities for quarterbacks, so maybe that'll help a little bit. Now, I'll also say the one wrinkle that I really want to see a lot more of in this offense is throws over the middle, you know, hitting some routes that are quicker over the middle to a tight end and throwing some different wrinkles in that way and not always going with the wide splits, having the ability to do different, line up different ways and get the passing game going that way. So with a guy who's been turnover prone, maybe not the best year to do that and make those tweaks to the offense, depending on who starts, could be Jake Merklinger. Could be Joey Aguilar. I don't think it's going to be George McIntyre, given how young he is, and he really needs some seasoning. But, yeah, this is a great situation for Joey Aguilar. He's upgraded teams. This Tennessee roster is better than the UCLA roster. There's going to be more eyeballs on him. A lot more people are going to see him. I think it's a great thing for him, and Josh Heupel does have a track record of doing this. Now, I don't think he's done it with a guy who came in after spring. and is just going to be there for summer or fall camp and then getting ready for football season. So that's going to be a challenge in and of itself. And I didn't watch, you know, him much at App State. I've seen highlights like everyone else. I don't love that his numbers fell off a cliff from 1 year to the next.
That is concerning.
2023 to 2024, right? And I know there's a lot of, well, the team got worse and the coach ended up getting fired. And I get it, but you still want to see a different direction statistically than the way that he went. So I'm not going to sit here and make any proclamations on him as a player. I just know that he's got 2 years of starting experience in college football. So that probably gives him an edge over Jake Merklinger, who's not really taking a meaningful snap. I know he got some garbage time snaps last year, but it's not taking a meaningful snap in college football yet. But Merklinger has the advantage of being around that system longer than he has. So I think it's going to be a real battle in fall camp. But if Joey Aguilar can win that job and play well, and let's say he gets Tennessee to 8-4, you know, this year. They're not, I mean, I don't think they're a playoff team right now, but let's say they're 8-4, let's say 9-3 on the high end. Joey Aguilar is going to really help himself. If he's the quarterback for all 12 games and Tennessee's able to do that, that's going to be an amazing story for him.
So I've made this point previously on my show, but I played college football. I didn't play in the SEC, but I played college football. And after my freshman year, the coaching staff left. We got a new head coach, new coaching staff, ran a completely different system than what we ran my freshman year. But having that spring with my new teammates, with the new freshmen that were coming on campus, and getting that familiarity with the new playbook benefited me so much going into the fall. And I think it's the exact same because I'm hesitant of teams that bring in a quarterback from the spring transfer portal window and expect them to be the starter because they miss out on that spring. Now, with Tennessee's case, it's a little bit different considering everything that happened with Nico. Joey Aguilar is probably going to be the favorite going into this quarterback competition, and I'm with you. I don't think it's going to be George McIntyre. But Jake Merklinger is interesting because he doesn't have the experience. He has some garbage time reps, like you said. But I believe he has the leg up in this situation, given that he has over a year being able to study the playbook and learn under guys like Nico, like Gaston Moore. So I'm not ready to say that Joey Aguilar is flat out going to be the starting quarterback for the University of Tennessee.
Yeah, I'm completely with you. I think it's way more of a competition than many people in media are making it out to be. I think that they're really going to battle it out in fall camp, and I would not be shocked at all if Merklinger is the starter in Atlanta against Syracuse in that first game. And keep this in mind, too. Josh Heupel handpicks his quarterbacks, right? Like, he's not the most active recruiter as a head coach. He recruits hard, but he's not the most active. He's active when it comes to quarterback. He is going to study film, watch guys, meet with them, and he handpicks his quarterbacks and what he likes. He handpicked Merklinger back in high school in Savannah, Georgia, to be his guy, a guy who had offers all over the country, you know, was a high four-star recruit. So he likes Merklinger too, and I think that's important. And I think all the smoke around different power conference quarterbacks in this transfer window in Tennessee where they're going to convince someone to leave and all that, I always thought that was going to be a tough pull. It's not as easy as just, oh, just go pay them $2 million and they'll leave. Well, they're probably making good money at their current school, and that's tough to leave when now you're the guy being Nico Iamaleava, right? You're the one that's going to turn your back on your team and your teammates after spring practice and leave those guys in a bad spot to go to a better situation. So I understood why that was going to be a difficult pull. It just happened to work out where it was kind of the perfect arranged marriage with a guy that Heupel likes that was suddenly available because Nico had replaced him at UCLA.
And there's no doubt that if Joey Aguilar wins the starting job, has a lot of success, there's going to be a statue of him outside of Neyland Stadium, and it will be like the biggest punch in the face to that whole Iamaleava camp. And so we'll have to see how that goes. But don't count out Jake Merklinger just yet because he was borderline five-star recruit. So there certainly has a lot of talent. I've heard great reports that he's been getting much better throughout the duration of spring camp. I thought he looked okay during the – I guess it really wasn't a spring game, spring practice, whatever you call it. So I'm not ready to count out Merklinger just yet.
You know, the first time I thought something might be up with Nico was when I was reading VolQuest and their practice reports, and they were raving about Jake Merklinger throughout spring.
Yep.
And I thought, started thinking about something like, this is odd that we're hearing about how well the backup quarterback is doing in the reps he's getting. And that's when I knew and obviously those guys oftentimes know more than they let on. I'm thinking they know something's up with the family and the negotiation, and that he may be looking around, because rarely do you get those in-depth backup quarterback reports like we saw at VolQuest and other sites this past spring. So that was my first hint, Parker, that something may be up with Nico in Tennessee. But look, Tennessee football is going to be fine. You know, I don't think the bottom's going to fall out this year or anything, but I also don't think they're a playoff team now. Not that they definitely were going to be with Nico either, but Josh Heupel's got the number one quarterback in the country coming in the year following. They got a five-star freshman on campus. They're recruiting at a high level. He's had success already. Tennessee football is going to be just fine. Nico's the one that has damaged himself in this whole deal.
And not to mention the number one quarterback in the on-three rankings, Faizeon Brandon, will be in Knoxville next year. Listen, Heupel pulled this program out of the absolute gutter. And if Tennessee goes 8-4, 7-5 without Nico, I think fans, as it stands right now in April, would be okay with it. But there is hope because, again, Faizeon Brandon's coming in. And who knows? Maybe Merklinger will be the guy and have a good amount of success. I mean, Nico didn't – he was all right last year. He didn't do anything spectacular, threw for about 200 yards a game, handed the ball off a lot to Dylan Sampson. The running back room, even though it's without Sampson, still has a lot of great young players. Peyton Lewis, Deshaun Bishop, got some high-level recruits coming in. So who knows how this thing will turn out.
Well, and what Tennessee needs is for 2021 Josh Heupel to show up. That was year one for him, where, remember, he went to Columbia, South Carolina, and just blew the doors off Missouri. They won big games that year. They put up a ton of points. Their offense was fun, and no one was expecting it. No one was expecting a combination of Joe Milton and then Hendon Hooker to be that good with an offense. They had no defense that year in 2021 and still were able to go, I think, 7-5 maybe, 8-4 that year, whatever it was. They exceeded expectations. This team has a better defense. This team's defense is going to be far better than that 2021 team. They don't have to be as excellent on offense to have success, but the expectations are also higher than with that 2021 team. So what he needs to do is exceed expectations with a group that's going to have a new quarterback. He's capable of doing it. We saw it in 2021. Tennessee needs that 2021 Josh Heupel team to show back up.
I agree 100%. Now, I want to transition, because it was announced yesterday, the college football playoff times, schedules, and I was looking at it, and I've been a staunch advocate for a while, but there are no playoff games that are being played on a Saturday this year, which is almost – it's ridiculous, because college football is a Saturday sport. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, yeah.
So I look at this and I'm like, there are no games on Saturday. And it honestly made me quite mad.
It's really weird. And the whole like back and forth with the NFL and college football on this, that time of year is fascinating to me. You don't want to go head to head with the NFL at any point, right? But the college football provides the NFL with such a great farm system to their sport that it's perfect for them for, you know, evaluation and not having to have a minor league system, there needs to be a lot more coordination between the two on when they're airing big events and not going head to head. But not having college football playoff games on a Saturday makes zero sense to me. So I don't get it. Everything's done with television in mind, and that's one that I do not understand.
And I mean, I know you don't want to go against the NFL, because the NFL will always be king. But if it were me, I'm not afraid to go up against the NFL on a Saturday. But let's say that you don't want to do that. It's like you said, college football is basically the minor leagues. It's a feeder system into the NFL. I feel like the least the NFL could do is, I believe this is the wild card weekend, they could just have all their games on a Sunday, Monday, whatever, and allow the playoffs to be on a Saturday. And I don't see the big qualm with that.
Yeah, I'm completely with you. Saturday is for college football, and if you're going to have your biggest end of the year event, which is the college football playoff, which no one will argue that, then you have those games primarily on Saturdays. Sometimes it seems like pro sports are guilty of this too. College sports, certainly, they overthink things. Sometimes the answer is very simple, and it's the easiest possible answer. It's Occam's razor. the most obvious solution is the solution and is the reason. And college football on Saturdays makes perfect sense. And the fact that the college football playoff is not going to be playing on Saturday, I do not get it. Don't understand.
I don't either. And one person that I know is probably not happy about that is the famous Lee Corso, who announced that he would be retiring. His final college game day will be on August 30th of this year. Now, they don't know where they're going to go yet. They haven't announced that yet. I have a pretty good feeling it'll be Ohio State, Texas, considering that Brutus is Corso's first love, and that's a big-time game, big helmet matchup there. But what was your reaction to the Lee Corso news?
Yeah, I mean, it's sad because he is an institution in college football, and he's a superstar of college football, regardless of how good he is or isn't. But given his health and his age, I mean, it's beyond time. You know, he had really cut back to not appearing on the show as much in recent years. Anytime there's a long plane flight, I noticed he would not be a part of it. I think it's beyond time. I like the setup here where he gets to go and have a swan song and have one last show where they get to honor him appropriately. I thought they did a good job honoring him last year in a lot of ways. That Indiana playoff game was a really cool tribute to him also with the game day set there. So I think ESPN is going to do a really good job of making that day about Lee Corso and his contribution to college game day and, in turn, the sport of college football. And I can't wait to watch it. It's the right thing. We get time to build up to it and then see that final show and that final send-off. And he's such an emotional guy, and Kirk Herbstreit is so emotional too, that they're going to have a difficult time getting through it. But he's a legend. You know, I don't think you need anyone to do the headgear selection. You don't need a replacement.
No. Nope.
They don't need to add anybody on that show.
Nope.
Just let Lee Corso retire off into the sunset. Don't add anybody. Keep Nick Saban, who's really good, talking more. Keep Pat McAfee, who offers that element of it that Corso did, the zaniness to it. Let him cook. Let him do his thing. He doesn't have to put on headgear at the end of any of that. Leave that for Lee Corso would be my take on that. You don't need a Lee Corso replacement. You got good enough there with both the combination of Saban and McAfee.
I agree, and I feel like we all knew this was it was beyond time. We all knew it was coming, but my head was kind of at the place where I'll get to it when it gets here. And when you consider, I mean, this guy was a player back at Florida State way back in the day. Then he was a coach, and when he retired, I feel like the thing that people are going to remember him most by is College Game Day. I mean, probably a ton of people my age don't even know that he was a coach or a player. They know him as the guy that put on the headgear on Saturdays. So I agree. There doesn't need to be anybody else that puts on the headgear. That is a Lee Corso thing.
He's the Dick Vitale of college football.
Absolutely.
You know, Dick Vitale was a coach at Detroit University, Detroit Mercy, and no one remembers that.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
I mean, they know him as a TV personality
right
around the sport of college basketball, and that's the same with Lee Corso. He had a long coaching career. And he was a coach, but we remember Lee Corso as larger-than-life TV personality. And that's how – I think that's not just how a younger generation will remember him, Parker. I think that's how every generation will remember Lee Corso, as the guy who put on the mascot heads at the end of College Game Day and brought a lot of joy to a lot of people during his time on TV.
Absolutely. And one more thing for you, because I know you got to go, but if you had to give advice to young people wanting to get into sports media – what would your advice be?
Be ready to do everything. There's no one thing that you can do and get away with it anymore in media. You know, probably when I was starting out, you could go into print. You could go into television. You could go into radio. You could do different things and really kind of hone in on that craft of doing what you're doing, whatever the medium was. I think now the key is you got to be able to produce your own content. You got to be able to edit. You got to be able to be good on camera. You got to be able to be good when you're not on camera. You got to be able to write some. I mean, the digital world that we're in now, and there's no turning back, you got to be a television presence and a radio presence. You got to be a written presence, and you got to be able to produce your own content and make sure technically you can do that. So that is the new era that we're in. I think in a lot of ways it's better than it was even when I started out, where you had to go the more traditional route, and it's a lot tougher. And it's worse in certain ways, too. But it's still a great business to be in. We are in the toy department of life and of work. And I'm thankful I get to work in it every single day. And I hope young people getting in the business realize how lucky they are as well because it's a sweet gig when you get it. So congrats to you for having a job in sports media, and it's fun for anyone who gets to do it.
Oh, amen.
Any day from there.
Amen to that. Well, Chad, I really appreciate you coming on. Like I mentioned at the beginning, you're our very first guest. So congratulations to you, I guess.
I'm honored to be the very first guest. This will go down in the Hall of Fame, much like Lee Corso on College Game Day. So you can never take that away from me. I'll always be the first guest on this podcast. So I know I've accomplished something. Parker, I really appreciate it, man. This is a lot of fun, and good luck with the podcast.
Thank you very much. There you have it. That was our interview with OutKick's Chad Withrow, co-host of Hot Mike. Him and Jonathan Hutton do an outstanding job with the show over there, and we certainly appreciate having him on today. Certainly a great conversation. We covered a lot of topics, and I hope that you find this episode interesting. Make sure to continue to subscribe to The Game Nashville, where you will get each and every episode of The Air Raid with Parker Kelly, as well as some of our other great podcasts that we're doing here at 102.5 The Game. We will have another episode here for you shortly, so make sure to stay tuned into that here on The Air Raid with Parker Kelly.